So everyone has to read this as a kid. Sometimes it's torture, sometimes it's for love. But how were you guys introduced to Hamlet?
Well, I mean, I didn't have to read it as a kid. I had to read Romeo and Juliet, and torture would be definitely the word that I would describe. So when I was 15 years old, I was definitely not interested in Shakespeare. I was watching Stone Cold Steve Austin, WWF. That was what I wanted to watch.
Shakespearean elements there, though.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. It's theater. But then certainly as, you know, I evolved and, you know, got into acting, then of course I very much got interested in Shakespeare, and I've done various productions of Shakespeare in the past, but really only started to dive into Hamlet, of course, within the last year once I knew that this was going to be happening. But I had read it before, but never really paid that much of attention to it until now. Of course, I know, so I'm dissecting it from every angle that there is.
I hated Shakespeare growing up. I did not like reading it in school. I had to read Julius Caesar. I had to read that Scottish play. I had to read Hamlet. I hated all of it and stayed away from it in my career as an actor. I was a song and dance man for years. That was about 30 pounds ago. And in 1982, Raymond Gasper, who was a well-known director and a leading member, actually, of the avant-garde movement in the 60s, was doing a production of Hamlet. And he saw me in a summer stock production, and he asked me to audition. At that point, I was doing West Side Story, and it had just gotten canceled. So I had nothing to do, so I said, oh, what the hell. I gave possibly the worst audition he or I have ever seen. And yet he still cast me as Rosencrantz, of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern fame. And we did it at Queen's College as a workshop with about 35 people in the cast, as he believed in having courtiers and every single part and every single guard, etc. That was a lot of fun. When it was over, I thought, okay, my career for Shakespeare was over, as I heard that he was bankrolling the production into Manhattan. He was going to make it an off-Broadway professional production. I said, okay, well, no way am I going to be part of that, so thanks for everything. I'm going to go find a production of Guys and Dolls to do. I heard a rumor that 30 of the 35 people were recast, and I said, okay, fine. Well, maybe I'll go see it. And then I heard I was one of the five to remain. And I went into the Lion Theater on the original Theater Row, and from being a chorus boy, I suddenly had to have a resume, a picture, and I had the door of Shakespeare opened to me, and I never looked back. It was a defining moment of my life. It changed my entire thought on theater. It changed my entire thought on my own life and my own career. Today, 30 years later, I am now a professor of theater and communication at Kingsborough College. I have directed or produced or performed in about half of Shakespeare's canon. I have taught Shakespeare. I adore Shakespeare. I still can't read it. If ever I'm doing a Shakespeare play, I rent the movie. But but to do Shakespeare is one of the greatest thrills for me. This is about my 10th or 12th production of Hamlet. And one thing which I had an epiphany about 2 years ago, I unfortunately it was at the memorial service for Raymond Gasper, the director who'd given me such a wonderful opportunity in the 80s, and I realized I was now in his place. My grizzled beard and my lack of Bronx accent showed me that I was now where he was. And so I realized now it is my duty to do what he did. And so I now, every production I do, I pay it forward. Every production I do is to share what he taught me and what I've learned over the years with other performers. It was true, I was supposed to just do public relations for this, and when Matt called up and chewed my ear off on his thoughts on Hamlet, I looked up to the heavens and saw Ray Gasper smiling and went, "My lord, the players have arrived." And I knew that this was one of the places to pay it forward. So I'm honored to be part of this and to continue what Dr. Gasper gave me in 1982.
This is briefly touched upon before, but to you guys, why does Shakespeare still matter?
Because Shakespeare is clairvoyant. because Shakespeare is the best public relations man you will ever meet. Pardon me for sounding windy and dusty. If you know Marlowe's The Jew of Malta, you know that play cannot be done because the anti-Semitism and the bigotry, the anti-African-American and Muslim feelings within it make it impossible to do. But for some reason, we have no problem doing Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice, Othello, or Titus Andronicus, because he is brilliant. He was able to keep Shylock, the evil, villainous Jew, but somehow hath not a Jew eyes, hath not a Jew hands, senses, dimensions, passions. If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die? Somehow he knew that 400 years later, he would have a very different audience. And if you look at each one of his plays, whether it's Romeo and Juliet, whether it's Richard III, whether it's Shylock in The Merchant of Venice or any of that, he has taken, and this is why we make Shakespeare the parable, he has shown us that you might be a villain, but you're also a hero. You might be bad, you might be good. For those of you who know Elmer Rice's The Adding Machine, it seems only the people who kill bad people go to heaven, if you know his play. And Shakespeare is relevant today because everyone can read it and say, oh, that's me. You can't do that. Ironically, Shakespeare was reviled in his day. You can't do that with Ben Jonson, with Christopher Marlowe, with Thomas Kidd, with any of the authors from that time period. But Shakespeare you can. And 500 years from now, people will be saying the exact same thing.
How do you follow that up?
I can't top his answer. Defer to him on everything.
All right, so...
It's all the one.
Maybe I need some.
For the people that have said to themselves, oh, I've seen this already, why should I come see this? We've touched upon this already, how this play is going to be very different from former, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so I would say not only have they not seen it before, but they'll never see it again, because right. there's a new character added to the text, and, you know, we wrote it, so it's not like it's at the drama bookshop and you can go buy it and produce it yourself. This will be the only version of this Hamlet that you will ever see. Because of the creation of the storyteller character, which is being played by RJ. I call him Bob, but he likes RJ. Jay came up with a great concept for the steampunk costumes, which I think is super. So, you know, we've got the steampunk costumes, we've got the addition of a new character. We don't really know where it's taking place. We haven't set it anywhere. It could be apocalyptic, it could be in the future, it could be in the past. It's in an alternate universe. And because of that alternate universe, we're taking lots of different liberties with the way we're presenting the story, and I'll get into that a little bit later.
How many of you are Doctor Who fans? When I mentioned Doctor Who, you know. Doctor Who is a British science fiction series, and basically its premise is that time is not linear. That time is
timey-wimey.
Exactly. And our idea behind Hamlet is that it is not an old play. It is a story that may have happened, may possibly will happen, is happening even as we speak. We have done this by adding in Saxo Grammaticus's text for Omleth, which is the Scandinavian Hamlet. We have lines from Hieronymo Gone Mad, which is Thomas Kidd's version of Hamlet that was written about 10 years before Shakespeare's version. We have inferences from Ur Hamlet, which is now lost. We have inferences from the story of Brutus, which is a Roman story, basically, of Hamlet. So our basic goal is to show that there always was a Hamlet, always will be a Hamlet, and we are Hamlet right now.
So I've been covering theater for about a decade. I know you longer than that.
Yeah.
I know you for a couple of years. How did you guys meet? How did this all start?
Yeah, very interesting. Bob kind of touched on it a little earlier in his speech. Jay was originally hired to do the PR, and we had a very long conversation about the PR, and he told me how Hamlet was his favorite piece and, you know, really went on about all the various different productions that he had directed, and, you know, he obviously knows his stuff. So when things kind of fell apart with the original director, on a whim, I was just like, let me ask this guy if he'd be interested in directing it, because I know that not only has he directed it, what, five times? This will be six?
Yes.
But he's also played Claudius, played Guildenstern,
Claudius,
the Gravedigger.
The Polonius, the ghost of King Hamlet, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and the Gravedigger.
Yeah, so I felt that there probably wasn't anybody that I knew that was more qualified to direct it than Jay, and I reached out, and we had a meeting at the Soho Cigar Bar, which donated all of the wine, and...
PR, that's nice.
Yeah, we had a couple of cigars, and we talked for hours, and we emailed for weeks, and then we just said, "Yeah, let's do it."
He's exactly right. And the one thing I need to add to that is, I'm a Hamlet junkie, obviously, and a connoisseur of it. I don't just say, "Oh, I got to do Hamlet," and go everywhere to do it. In talking to Matt and seeing his passion, seeing his care for what he wants to do, and reading his concept, I realized that this would actually be a challenge. And at this point, after doing it so many times, aside from just wanting to work with new, fresh people, as I mentioned, to do a play like this and it's still a challenge, count me in.
There's so many iconic roles in this production. What's casting been like?
Don't look at me. I was the last one to get hired.
Yeah. Well, that's true. A lot of the casting people that were in place from the original production, we were originally supposed to open April 6th, so... It should have come and gone by now. But it really was a blessing in disguise that it ended up being pushed back to July. It's given us the chance to do things like this, the launch party, among other things that we'll be doing. But there were a lot of really talented people involved in the original cast. And when that production kind of fell apart, I really wanted to make sure that those people were still involved. There were some parts that weren't cast at the point when the original director had to step down. So we retained everyone that had been cast, Lorraine as Ophelia, Allie, Milton, of course, Jim as Polonius. But then there were a few other roles that needed to be filled, and I turned it over to Jay, and he filled out the rest of the cast, and I think we have a dynamite cast. And on the postcards, we have a website, mandelightsnotme.com. If you go on the website, you can see the whole cast, all their bios. You're going to meet everybody here tonight, but you can also see their pictures and learn more about what they've done in the past, the different where they've studied, what other roles they've played and such.
My joy was twofold in terms of casting, because mine was an unorthodox situation with this. Number one, there are some actors I've worked with in my life who I just consider Shakespeareans. And when I had the opportunity to put some into the show, I was absolutely thrilled. David Arthur Bacharach, who is playing King Claudius, is one of those actors who I consider a Shakespearean. And in an email conversation, he said, "Oh, I've always wanted to play King Claudius." I thought, "Oh, thank you. Dear David, Merry Christmas." on that level, speaking Merry Christmas, the first time I met many members of the cast was at the read-through that we did about 2 weeks ago. So I walked in here with my heart in my mouth saying, "Oh, please, 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 let them just be okay." And I was utterly thrilled, because everyone sitting around me, and I wasn't kidding, sounded and looked exactly what I wanted. And there were many points I played the grizzled director. "Oh, good, 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 good." But in my head, I'm going... So I am really thrilled with the cast. And I'm extra thrilled because, like I say, they were presented to me. And if I ever had any doubts about Matt's taste, the people that he helped choose... show that his taste in Shakespeare is excellent.
So let's continue that conversation about Matt. What makes this guy special? What makes him your guy?
That's a good question. John Gielgud, when he directed Richard Burton in 1964, in his version of Hamlet, when he directed Hamlet, he said, "You cannot play Hamlet. You can only attempt it." And he himself played the role twice in his life before that. I've always felt that the person who plays Hamlet... Now, Hamlet is either insane or plays the insane. The actor needs to be either insane or plays the insane. And I'm not meaning that whimsically. I'm saying you need to have a certain level of dedication. You need to have a certain power that goes beyond simply being an actor. There are many people who have played Hamlet. There are many people who have attempted Hamlet. There are few who are showing success at it. My conversations with Matt, our work together, listening to him and his process, the thousands of emails where he reads one book and suddenly decides and sends me 10 pages of actor notes for one scene shows me that he has the insanity and the sense to be able to tackle such a role. So in terms of what makes him special is he understands Hamlet, he understands Hamlet's journey, and that's not an easy thing to say.
Okay. I think everyone in here has seen more plays that they can count. But if you recall a name of a play, they'll go, oh, I remember that, and they'll give us a little something. So a couple of years from now, what do you want that little something to be? What do you want people to take away from this production?
My lord.
I mean, I want this to be a production that they'll never forget. I want them to say, you know, we saw Bob, you know, Bob touched upon all the various different versions of Hamlet. Oh, yeah, we saw the nude Hamlet once. You know, they did this, they did it on the moon, they did it in the Wild West, and it was cute. But there was this one time that we saw this one production in New York City, and they introduced this concept of a narrator, and they had these steampunk costumes, and the staging was so unique, and the music was so unique, and the lighting and the acting was so powerful, and it was something that I just, you know, didn't forget. I don't feel that you have to see something on Broadway to be overwhelmed by the talent, by, you know, the production. A lot of times, you know, the stuff on Broadway sucks. So this is not going to suck. This is going to be extremely well done.
And here's my press campaign. Hamlet, it won't suck.
No, this is going to be a very powerful production. Absolutely. Everyone I know is going to rise to the occasion. I know I'm going to rise to the occasion. I'm the son of a mailman. I have the DNA in my blood. I will deliver. I promise that.
Good. So, I've covered a couple of plays that you've been in over the years. And for Charlie, you worked with Easter Seals. For The Elephant Man, you actually had a mask designed so you could play that character. What's the X factor here? What's the special thing that you're bringing into this?
Well, touching on my insanity that Jay talked about before, there's three things that I'm doing. I'm getting an entire sleeve tattooed. Obviously, it's for all things for Matt, but it also ties into the character of Hamlet. If you look at the postcard, you can see that the sleeve is starting. I'll be completely done by June 1st. It's going to be very dark. It's going to fit the character. So that's one of the things that I'm doing, is getting a whole sleeve, you know, molded, again, for the character. I mean, for Matt, but it also works with the character. The second thing that I'm doing, and this is definitely a little insane, is I'm seeing a therapist at the moment, but I'm not seeing him as Matt. I'm seeing him as Hamlet, and I'm talking to him about all the issues that are going on in the story. So that's been really wild, you know, walking in and being like, hey, you know, my father was killed by my uncle. I want to fuck my mother. Like, let's talk, you know? So that's basically, you know, the things that are going on with Hamlet and that. Now, the
therapist, no.
I'm sorry?
The therapist, no.
Oh, he knows that I'm, yeah, he knows, yeah, of course.
I was going to ask that question.
He updated it.
No, the therapist knows. And the final thing is I'm getting a custom-made glow-in-the-dark Uric skull made by an FX movie designer in Las Vegas. The product was supposed to be here tonight, but there were some problems with the casting, so I'm not going to be able to get it until next week. But I do have some pictures, and I'll pass my phone around, and you can see the quality of this. When you look at the skull, you'll be able to see that it's strange. It's a very deformed skull. And my feeling with that was, and we touched upon it at the reading, if Hamlet is walking around the graveyard and picks up this skull, how the hell is he going to know it's Yorick unless there's something very unique about the skull that makes him Yorick? So I talked with the designer. We came up with a concept, and I'm going to pass this around, and everyone can take a look at what it's going to be. It's going to eventually glow in the dark, but that's one of the you know, initial processes. And the fact that you can get away with the glow-in-the-dark skull is because we're setting it in this alternate world, in this other universe that, you know, a glow-in-the-dark skull would work.
The very interesting thing about it, when I first saw it, I laughed. The way, when you see it, when it goes around, what it is, this person is deformed a la Quasimodo. And you get the idea that part of his head, literally the skull is deformed enough that you could see part of his head is away from the other part and whatever. And what I thought was so brilliant about that was that it looks like it's a two-faced skull. And the whole point of Hamlet is that everyone is two-faced. He even says to Ophelia, you nature gives you one face and yet you paint yourself another. And smile and smile and be a villain. The whole play is about the two faces of people, and even Hamlet himself. Is he insane, or is he or is he mad north by northwest when the wind is southerly? He knows a hawk from a handsaw. So the idea that Yorick is this two faces worked really, really well with the general concept. My wife, who's a brilliant artist, and ironically, we met when she was Queen Gertrude in one of my Hamlets. She works a great deal with herbalism, and she says that plants grow where they are needed. And so it's interesting, whenever you see something, whenever you say, oh, look at that plant, and it seems to work with your health, or it's your favorite plant, I also look at it in a sense of circumstance. When things come together, when something seems to be right, when a piece just falls into place, when someone leaves, another comes in, when a door slams and a window opens, it's supposed to happen. So when I saw the skull and I saw the two faces, I said, okay, everything's on schedule.